Left Field Investors is a community dedicated to limited partner investors who are interested in building wealth through real estate investing. The community is focused on education, networking, and engagement with quality operators and partners. We provide tools, webinars, and a forum where members can discuss everything related to real estate investing, including deals, operators, investment strategies, and much more. Coming soon, we're adding a new tool, sponsor reviews. This will be a place where our members can rate and review operating partners to further help each other in our investment journeys. Check us out at leftfieldinvestors.com.
We're grabbing properties, every asset class, with interest rates between like 2.5 and 5.5, because they were the people that owned back then, right? When the rates were good, and they have to sell for whatever reason. And I don't know about you, but I don't think we're going to see those rates anytime soon. So that's cheap money.
Hello, left fielders. Welcome to the Passive Investing from Left Field podcast. Our community is focused on networking and education to help people invest passively and think differently. Let's go.
This is Brian Burke from Praxis Capital, and you are listening to the Passive Investing from Left Field podcast.
I'm really excited today to have Chris Prefontaine with us. He is a four-time best-selling author and founder of The Smart Real Estate Coach, including a podcast of the same name. Chris has been in real estate for over 30 years and now focuses on his coaching program to help students escape the W-2 through real estate, which, you know, hits right at home here at Left Field Investors. So, Chris, welcome to the Passive Investing from Left Field podcast.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
So the first question I always ask is if you can talk about your journey. How did you get into real estate? You know, you've been in it 30 years, so I know that's a lot. And then how'd you decide to go into coaching? If you can kind of just cover all that, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll do it quickly, 10,000 foot view, New England style, because I'll put them to sleep if I go through 33 years. So I journeyed through things like the building business, did that by building on what I called spot lots, single lots left in subdivisions. We did all that on terms, Jim. I was naive enough in my 20s to ask vendors and landowners to wait until the house was built and sold and everybody got paid, and it worked. I don't know if it would work today, but it worked then. Did that, owned a realty executives franchise in the 90s, sold that in 2000 to Coldwell Banker. And then from then to the crash, I actually worked on my own investments and I coached people at that time, not investors. It was high gross commission income realtors earning $1 or $2 million and higher, who knew how to earn, but were a mess with every part of their life. So I coached them. Then the debacle happened, though, to bring you up to date. And the debacle for me, the 2008 crash, was nasty. I got beat up pretty badly. I owned a bunch of properties where I was signed personally guaranteeing loans. So that taught me a lot of lessons. And it also brought me to where I am today, because from 2008 till 12, I had my head in the sand. When I came back out of that, I re-engineered my business. And I did so to not utilize banks, to buy everything creatively. That's why we call it real estate on your terms, creative real estate. It's been around since literally 1600s, but no one quite wrapped a system around it. And that's what we've done. We've got some cool things we've trademarked for cash flow and things of that nature. When I say we, it's a family company. I started it and then my son joined, my son-in-law and daughter. And then we've got a great team all across North America now, of about 21 people. We do buy and sell still in the trenches without using banks or gobs of our own money. And then to your point earlier, we now coach that. That is the faster growing business. We hit Inc. 5,000 the last 3 years. And it's because of a lot of things, but the main thing is, so you understand the model, we teach students, but we teach them interactively. So we're doing deals in the trenches with them, helping them structure deals, exit out of deals. And that's, I think, the best way to learn. So that's 33 years. You can go back to any piece of that, but that's kind of where we're at today.
No, that's a great start. So a couple of things. I want to go back to the 2008 debacle, as you called it. Can you talk about some of the maybe mistakes you made and lessons you learned? And again, as we talked about, we're talking mostly to passive syndication investors, but we also have quite a few people who are just interested in real estate, who also went through 2008, who have different levels of what we call active investing. So, don't stick just to the passive stuff. Let's dig into all of it. But what are some of the lessons you learned from 2008,
most of it, honestly, was the personal guarantees. Now, I know most people go, well, that's what you do. You take out a bank loan, you personally guarantee it. The fact is, I don't anymore. No matter what asset class I'm talking about, I do not. So that was the biggest lesson, because I had projects going like conversion of multis to condominiums. We had a big one going on there, for example, we were selling them like hotcakes. And then when the market took a turn, this was right in the city of Providence, the condos I was selling for 175 grand, I couldn't give away for 50, Jim. Then that's extreme. It didn't happen in every market. But so picture that construction loan now, because I was doing that conventionally. I had a construction loan and I had private investors who were passive. Now picture that construction loan. What do you think the bank did? They came looking for me. And that's not facetious. That's exactly what happened. I had about 23 of those. So that taught me really fast that I don't want to do that again. And so when I finally got my head out of the sand and said, okay, this wasn't me, like the whole market went down, I can get back in the game. I wanted to change the rules. That's all. So that's biggest lesson was personal guarantees and loans, not necessary when you can buy creatively.
And then you mentioned you don't use a bank and you use your own bank. Can you talk about that? How do you do that? And just kind of the basic strategy there?
Yeah, we buy three ways. And this is any asset class. We buy owner financing. The building I'm standing in right now is on a very busy quasi highway, not quite a highway. It's a mixed use building and it was free and clear. I look for free and clear owners and I structure owner financing terms. So I'm paying them. On single families, I do principal only, typically 99% of the deals, principal only, no interest. So you hammer down principal. It's a great recession hedge. On this building, we did sort of a hybrid model. He was a very, he was sophisticated in that he owned a lot of land and a lot of property. Super passive. He had management companies in place and we did a hybrid deal, meaning I did principal only for about 18 months because he thought, well, who does that? I'm not going to do that, but I got him to do that. And then we took the balance and amortized it. So he got his way and I got my way. So any asset class can be done like that with owner financing. I like free and clear. Second way we buy, again, really cool right now in this climate, is subject to existing mortgages, meaning if you're not familiar with that, we buy properties and the mortgage stays in the seller's name until such time we cash it out. So we're never assuming we're paying the payments on their behalf and we own the property. And the reason I said it's really cool right now, picture this. We're grabbing properties, every asset class, with interest rates between like 2.5 and 5.5 because they were the people that owned back then, right? When the rates were good and they have to sell for whatever reason. And I don't know about you, but I don't think we're going to see those rates anytime soon. So that's cheap money. We're buying those properties subject to existing financing. So those two ways do not require me to go to a bank at all.
Okay. And you said there was a third way that you're doing it as well?
Yeah, we do lease purchase. And that's more for the singles. If anyone's open or does that, you know, you got rental properties and single families and things of that nature. We do those with lease purchase if we have to, if the owner doesn't want to give up the deed.
Okay. So talk about the principal only, the part of that owner financing. So how does that work?
I always like to use real deals. So let's use this deal. When we structure a deal, I typically, if you look at sort of some of the variables, you got price, right? You got the length of the term, you got down payment, if there is one, and you have the monthly payment. Those are kind of like the things I deal with. I say to the seller, what's most important? Well, what's most important usually to free and clear owners, they're not financially needing the cash today. They would have pulled it out, presumably. They want their price. This guy wanted his price. And he also wanted to, for estate planning and tax reasons, he wanted owner financing. So we structured the principal only monthly payments. There are some rules with imputed interest with the IRS, but they don't apply to most of what I buy under million or singles. They don't apply to that. You don't need to have interest. You can do principal only. Just picture that, $3,700 a month going to principal for the first 18 months. You're never getting any kind of arrangement like that from a bank. And then we took the remaining balance and amortized it over his interest rate, which I think was like 5.2. It's still a great rate. That's how we structured it.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, figuring out creative ways to structure and not having to rely on banks, it seems like it gets rid of some of the problems you had in 2008. So for sure. Now that, you know, a lot of stuff has happened since 2008, right? We had the pandemic and then we went right into, you know, like boom times and then interest rates got in the way. So I heard you mention in another podcast, you know, that fortunes are created during downturns. So how should investors navigate with these uncertain times? When do we get off the bench and start investing? And when do we kind of hold back? Can you talk a little bit about how a downturn creates a fortune and how you know when to jump in?
Yeah, and not just downturn. I'll add to the downturn. So downturn, but more so general umbrella, chaos or uncertainty, right? So we sort of have some uncertainty now. We have an election. We have stuff going on, the interest rates. There's sort of some uncertainty. there's the media screaming saying this is like 08, which it's not, but it's just a different market. So here's what I do know. I don't advocate like buying on up, buying on down, any of that. I don't. What I advocate is get real good, or if you're passive, get with someone who's real good at creative real estate, because creative real estate can and should be done up, down, sideways market. It's just a matter of what pond you're fishing in to find deals, but it can be done always and is profitable always. So if we know for certain there's one thing constant in real estate, and that's it's going to constantly change. Next year, you and I can talk about something else that's changing. So if we know it's constantly changing, why not get really good at operating in any type of market? And that's the creative real estate world. The reason I say in the downturn, I don't know what podcast that was, but you can take Joe Kennedy from the Depression. You can take this history going all the way back from people. When the media is screaming, everybody's running out the door, usually that's the time to be in the game. And I say that because a few reasons. One, is the world full of, and this is not a negative statement, it's just in my opinion a fact, is the world full of people that do whatever it takes every single day, no matter how hard or how long it takes to accomplish all their goals? Or is it more full of people that kind of follow the herd? It's the latter. And so if we know that, then why don't we make sure we're going in the opposite direction most of the time, real estate or not? That's just, again, my personal opinion. I'm not an economist in any shape, form, or fashion. I just know that when you're good at creative real estate, you can operate and should operate in this market. Case in point, everybody says to me on these shows, well, if people had those good interest rates, they can't be selling to you right now. I don't know why. That's who's selling to us. Why? Death, divorce, job change, relocation. Like, it happens, right? Life goes on. These mortgages with these low rates are available right now to us. That's a great example of what you should be doing right now instead of running.
Rustmill Capital is an elite Ohio-based private equity firm with a specialization in long-term, high cash flow multifamily investments. If you're looking for long-term recurring income, you should check out Rustmill Capital. From their approach to managing risk, to the locations they invest, the product quality they provide, this firm is serious about what they do, which is why the owners of Rustmill Capital invest their money in every deal they take on. Review their case studies by visiting rustbeltcapital.com. That's rustbeltcapital.com. Once again, rustbeltcapital.com, or email investor@rustbeltcapital.com.
Hello, left fielders. At LFI, you know our focus is on networking and education. Mark your calendars, because we're going to have a full day of it dedicated to you, our limited partners, at the Best Ever Conference on April 9th in Salt Lake City. LFI is opening the BEC with passive investing with left field investors, an event focused on passive investors. This will be where insightful content meets passionate limited partners. If you enjoyed BEC last year and the meetup in left field this year, then imagine them both back to back. The Best Ever Conference isn't just any event. It's the premier conference for commercial real estate investors and operators. Your ticket to passive investing with left field investors includes admission to the entire Best Ever Conference from April 9th through the 12th. Join us April 9th, where we will have a packed agenda with sessions focused on how to be a successful limited partner led by experienced LPs, top operators, and partners. Then immerse yourself in the full Best Ever Conference, where you will be surrounded by like-minded investors, operators, and industry experts for unparalleled opportunities for learning and networking. The best part, and there are so many, but the best part, you won't find a bigger discount on the regular ticket price than the one you get for being an infielder. That's more content for an exclusive lower price. Register for the event today at leftfieldinvestors.com/BEC, and we will see you at Passive Investing with Left Field Investors at the BEC. What asset classes? I know you seem to be talking mostly about single family homes, but are there other asset classes that you believe are, you know, we could have a long-term focus on? Or are there others that are kind of just shiny objects? And, you know, I get excited about all the new stuff, but I have to rein myself in and say, hold on, let's just do the tried and true, because usually boring makes you money and exciting often doesn't. So can you talk a little bit about how you see the shiny objects and what's here for the long term to make some real money over time?
Yeah. And this would depend, of course, you have a broad listener base. This would depend on, hey, I want some cash flow now, or hey, in the passive realm, hey, I'm okay. Just kind of tell me what's going to be the long-term nice flow for me there. So a couple of things in no particular order. I teach singles to newer investors only because of what you said. There's a shiny object syndrome in real estate. There's a lot of cool niches, but I will distract the daylights out of them if I start telling them all the asset classes. But every staple I teach in the creative real estate to them, they can do with any asset class, right? So I have some students that say, I love multis. And I say, great. if you want to do the 4 to 10 multi range, they're simple and easy to do with creative financing. If you want to go above 10, sort of a different way of approaching them. I like apartments as far as long term, if you want a general comment. My building here, I sold recently. Like, we're still in it. I'm going to be moving out soon, but I already sold it for a very handsome profit. And I sold it because I didn't like where office buildings were going. I don't care how busy the highway is right there. I didn't like where office buildings are going. I don't think that's the place to be right now. So just some comments on the, on those three asset classes. I can go deeper. I love to this day self-storage. I don't care where you are. Self-storage is a really cool asset class. Whole different conversation probably, but those are cool.
Well, yeah, let's dig into it. What do you like about self-storage?
So when I went through my change in 08, and this will add to that story, I went from a 2.5 acre sort of an estate property overlooking a harbor in Newport, which is almost impossible to get, to a one-bedroom apartment. So I learned really quick about self-storage and on the other side. Here's what I learned. It's very unlikely at the small monthly rates that they charge, all of them across the country, that you're going to yank your stuff out of there unless something dramatic happens, right, or you're done moving. Number one. Number two, once you're in there, there's incremental increases nonstop, and you're not dealing with the headaches of toilets and roofs and everything else. I just love every aspect of that cash flow stream.
And how do you do, like, again, we're a passive community. You're a little bit more active. So how do you invest in self-storage? Because what typical, you know, left field investor or community would do is find an operator and invest with them. So if you don't do that, are you going and buying actual self-storage facilities on your own?
I think right this second, there's none in my portfolio. I would tell you, just disclosure, I would tell you that there are, this is a great area, this niche, where there's a bunch of mom and pop still. And they can and will sell owner financing. That's the other reason. That's the tack on reason I like it. So you could fish in that pond. Remember I said earlier, it just depends what pond you fish in. You could fish in that pond for a bit and they're open to owner financing. And actually many of them for retirement reasons want owner financing. So look, if you're passive and you're used to just a syndication where you can put some money in, it's not too dissimilar and not too much of hands-on work to have a management company running a deal, a self-storage, a multi-unit complex. It's not too dissimilar for you to be investing that way. That's not as passive. It's the next notch down, but it's also not super active like I would be.
Right. And you're right, because we're real estate investors. So, you know, there's different degrees, right? I started out active and I've slowly gotten more and more passive as I go. And that's what I like. But that doesn't mean at some point I won't jump in and do an active deal here or there. So we talked about self-storage, single family, multifamily. Are there other asset classes that you're looking at that are of interest to you?
Me personally, no, Jim, at this stage. But if you asked me 2 years ago or 2 years from now, the answer is different, right? I turn 58 next month and my focus is a little bit different than say it was in the aggressive stages 10 years ago. So that, no, where I just hit you there is where I like to live, because the first one I talked about is where my community lives and I like to help them do deals. That's what we do. And then the second one is more on the passive side, which I like as I you know, transition to some, I'd say, lower key things.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Less aggressive.
And you talk about in some of your publications, the three paydays. Can you tell us what that is? How does it work? And what are the three paydays?
Yeah, so for someone who wants to be more active, or, hey, I'm an entrepreneur, Chris, I've been passive and I could start a business and put the right people in place. The three paydays is a cool model, because I don't care if you and I were opening a restaurant tomorrow, this model works. The three paydays are cash now. So when I fill a home, I get what we call a payday one. It's basically a down payment from a buyer. And that range is in our world, just our family company, not across the country, around 28 grand, call it 30 to round up. Payday two is the monthly spread. So every property we buy, like we talked about earlier on terms, creative real estate, has an underlying debt, whether that's seller or existing debt, I'm paying that. And I'm collecting something bigger and I'm keeping the delta. That's payday two, but it's every month. So when I launch a deal, I get a check and then I get monthly checks. And then payday three is, remember that principal pay down component I mentioned earlier? Well, at the end, when I cash out, of course, I mark the property up. There's a markup, but there's also all that principal accumulation that I paid down the whole term, whether that was 2 years or 10 years. And so payday three can be pretty hefty. We can buy, I'll give you an example. We bought a property for 183 grand, small, single family. But all three paydays were about 120 something grand. Why? Because of the three payday system, yes, but also mainly because of the principal pay down. It hammers down principal and you pick that up at the end. You're not paying it whoever you put in the property pays it. So we trademarked that federally. It's a pretty cool way of generating cash flow and wealth at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the third one is one that people don't realize, that when you're making your mortgage payment or you're making your loan payment, as you're paying the principal, that just goes right to your bottom line, right? That you're actually paying yourself for that. And then if you sell the property for more, then you have appreciation. So I think that's a really unique way of looking at it.
Well, that, and on top of what you said, if you do it right, we don't do deals unless it's contingent upon filling the home, right? Or property. So Rick comes to mind. Rick's a 30-year engineer for the government, 30 years. And he just left his job because he created five of these deals. Like we're talking about the heavier profit ones with owner financing. And every month when he makes a payment, he gets something bigger than that from his buyer in the house, right? Until he cashes it out. So he's never making that payment, yet his principal's hammering down.
And so talk about where do you see the real estate market going from here, right? We've talked about the downturn in 2008, and then, you know, we had everything went up for a long time. Pandemic was a quick blip. Everything kept going up. Interest rates kind of crushed a lot of real estate, and especially large multifamily operations, you know, with the debt issues they're having. Now there's talk of interest rates perhaps decreasing in 2024. As you mentioned, there's the election year. How do you see, and I know it's hard because, you know, real estate is a lot, right? There's a lot of different asset classes in there. But if you could just talk generally about how you see things going in 2024, or is it, you know, what you hear, stay alive till 25, or we'll wait until 25? You said there's opportunities everywhere, but how do you see the general market going in this year and next?
Yeah, disclosure. The billionaires don't know, right? So I'm just going to give you my two cents, right? They say they know, but they don't. No one knows. I just think, because of my personal opinion, because of the election coming, and because of what we just went through with all the increases, I think we are going to see a teeny bit of a drop or stabilization with the interest rates. That'll then, it's sort of like a magic 6.5, or certainly 6, if the rates ever go that low in 24. That kind of has everybody jumping back into the market. So I think that's going to go on. But I just think, you know, like the either a heartbeat or a stock chart kind of bopping up and down, I see 24 like that. Not a ton of movement in either direction, just a little bit of bopping up and down, which for me is great because it's just a little bit uncertain for people. So that's all I see that I would hang my hat on. After November and after the fall of the election, who knows? I'd stop there with my thoughts on what the market's going to do.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter now that it's owning a house has become much more expensive compared to renting a house. And so there's perhaps more people going to rentals. How does that affect your business and buying single family homes?
You just named why we're so busy right now. You precisely named it, because when the rates went up, I don't know what the stat is. Hundreds of thousands of buyers were pushed to the side, right? They were, because a year and a half, whatever it was ago, they thought they could buy this house in this dream neighborhood, and literally they got pushed to the side, right? They can't anymore. So they enter the rent-to-own program, and it gives them time to either save more money or for down payment or increase their credit score to get a better loan and lower that. It gives them that pathway to home ownership for most people who lost hope. So that's why it's so crazy busy right now for us. I couldn't, if I had more properties, we could keep filling them because of what you just said.
Interesting.
There's an opportunity there for anyone in our space. There's enormous opportunity. We have big communities of fix and flip people, as you know, and wholesalers calling us going, hey, we see what the market's doing. Can you teach our community to create a real estate? Because that's right now where it's at. That's the demand.
Well, let's talk about that. Your coaching business, Creative Real Estate. Can you explain what Creative Real Estate really means, and what do you do in your coaching business, and who's it targeted towards?
Yeah. So, okay. First, what it means is sort of what you and I alluded to at the beginning with how we buy without banks. That's Creative Real Estate. And people, sometimes I'll have a seller say, oh, I never heard of it. Say, okay, listen. If you read, who's the gentleman, Anderson Cooper's new book, it's not that new anymore, but he wrote about the Vanderbilts. I don't know if you've read it. The real reason I picked it up, it's not that I'm a fan of his. His Vanderbilts had a mansion in Newport, Rhode Island. That's where I live. So I'm like, that's cool. I'll read about that. But in reading it, he talks about owner financing in the 1600s before banking. Like, this has been around, right, forever. So Creative Real Estate has been there. That's what we do. On the coaching side, though, with the 3-payday trademark system, with the hands-on coaching in the trenches, that's what differentiates us, because what we want to do is do deals with students. Not, here's a program, great, we were good at selling a program, and then we let them go, and then they went off on their own. Unfortunately, that's rampant right now in education. It's all over the internet, and the guy rents his car and, you know, tells you how much money he can make tomorrow. We're the opposite. This is going to take time. It's hard to learn. Once you learn it, you've got a skill set for life, though. You can buy your own house with it, and you can do your own things with it. We're doing that by doing a deal with them. So if you're a student, Jim, we're on the phone with you coaching, sure, but we're also on the phone with you with your sellers. We're structuring deals, but doing it with you is the best way to learn interactively.
How would you recommend that someone who's looking for a coach or a mentor, how do we, and in a paid situation, right? And of course, the coaches need to be paid for their time and effort. I fully endorse that. But how does a person vet someone and say, okay, yeah, I'm the right fit for you. You're the right fit for me. Let's go and try this out. How do people know that you're the right person, I guess, or anybody is?
Yeah, anybody. So I'm not so naive to think we're the only one, right? Of course, there's too many great people in real estate. So here's a simple three-step formula. And frankly, you could use this to look at any industry help coach. First, pick a niche that you like or can get behind, because they're all different. People tend to flock to us to say, hey, you guys help people. Like, I kind of like that win-win. Okay. If that's what you like, then creative real estate's for you. Then secondly, if creative real estate's for you, find, or whatever niche, find then someone or a group that you can relate to. And I mean your value-wise too, right? You like the person or the group. You can get behind what they stand for. The rest of their life is in order. In my opinion, why would you follow someone if it's not? Because too many successful people have, you know, destroyed other areas of their life. So if you can get behind a person or a group and you can relate to them morally, ethically, and business-wise, the third part is the hardest. The third part is, okay, I found the niche. I found the group or person. Okay, I like where they are. They're kind of where I want to be, or they on that path. Third would be put the blinders on for 3 to 7 years. And that's the hardest part. It's easy for people to say it, but I've had people call me literally in 2.5 years and go, you know what? I tried it. It's not. I said, what do you mean you tried it? This is a burn all bridges 3 to 7 year commitment. And if you do that and you stick with that person or group that you were with, you'll have a great experience. Again, if you and I were going to, I'll use the restaurant again. We're going to open a restaurant. We never did it. I'll use that method. Go find the type of restaurant. Go find the person that already did it, and then put my blinders on and go at it for 3 to 7 years. I used to say three, Jim. I had Brian Tracy on my podcast during COVID. He's, I don't know, 82 or so then. And I said that to him confidently. He said, no, no, no. 3 years is not enough. You need seven. And he went through why and how he's gone broke and how it takes 7 years. So I say 3 to 7 now.
Oh, that's great. That's great advice. We appreciate that. The last question I always ask is, what's a great podcast you listen to? You cannot use the Smart Real Estate Coach podcast, because that's already going to be in the show notes. So give us another podcast or two that you like to listen to.
What comes to mind immediately, there's a lot of great ones, is Ed Milets. Ed's been on my show. I unfortunately can't get on his yet, but his podcast, he's got some tremendous guests. So I love that one.
And do you have the name of that one?
I think it's called the Ed Milet Show.
Oh, that's easy enough. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And so if listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about your coaching program and your business, what's the best way to do that?
I'll give you two links, Jim, and thank you. I appreciate it. I'm big on free. There's so many things out there you got to pay for to just look at. And I'd like you guys to, if creative real estate you think might scratch an itch, then do it for free. Go to, we got our free books. They're bestsellers, but you don't have to go to Amazon. Go to wickedsmartbooks.com, wickedsmartbooks.com/passive, the number one, passive one. And you'll get, we'll ship them. It's not one of those offers that says, put your card in and paper ship it. We're going to ship it. It's our cost. Don't worry about it. It's our gift to you. Take a peek at it. You can go on YouTube, of course, and type in Smart Real Estate Coach and see live deals. We expose them. And the last thing I'll tell you is you can, if you don't mind listening to my New England pace for 55 minutes, I have a free class. It's pre-recorded, so you don't have to even deal with me. You just have to listen. It's kind of A through Z what we do in a nutshell from a 10,000-foot view, and that's smartrealestatecoach.com/masters class.
Perfect. We will put all of that in the show notes. This has been great. This is a little bit different show than we usually do, but, man, it's fascinating information, and we're glad you joined us. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Circus City's trademarks were acquired and it was relaunched in 2018 with a fully online technology-focused strategy. It's an iconic brand with a rich history, now operating as a tech-driven e-commerce enterprise and steering clear of brick-and-mortar stores. Since its online revival, Circus City has achieved over $130 million in revenue, is already profitable, and on a path towards a multi-billion dollar valuation. Circus City's Series A funding round is now open for accredited investors, targeting an over 7x multiplier through a 2028 sale or IPO in U.S. capital markets. To learn more about this exclusive opportunity, visit invest.circuitcity.com. That's invest.circuitcity.com.
Investing in syndications can be a daunting task. Wiring a large sum of your hard-earned money to someone you talk to on the phone for 30 minutes can certainly be scary. How can you be confident in what you're doing? Steve Sue, one of the founders of LFI, just published a book called Avoiding Rookie Errors as a Left Field Investor, 20 lessons learned from 14 years of investing in private syndications. This is by far the best book I've read on syndication investing. It's an easy-to-read book, chock full of great advice from Steve's experience as a passive investor. It is a must read. Whether you're a first-time passive investor or a veteran, go to www.leftfieldinvestors.com/books and click on the link to Avoiding Rookie Errors as a Left Field Investor. If you are a passive investor, you got to read this book.
Well, that was definitely an interesting episode with Chris. He is not our typical guest, as he's more focused on active real estate investing. But, you know, someone who has 33 years of experience in real estate and has been through a few downturns and all that, I am always up for talking to them and seeing if I can get anything to help me on my passive journey. And I know some of you out there are also active investors, so hopefully you got something out of this. I certainly did. You know, I love the aspect of creative real estate. He doesn't use banks. You know, and he just finds interesting ways to do it, whether it's seller financing, you know, the way that it's principal only on some of these deals. Just, you got to ask and talk to people and explain situations, and you can maybe get them to do it creatively so you don't have to use the banks, which, you know, the reason he likes to avoid them is because of the troubles he had in 2008 with the banks coming after him for some of those properties. And it just makes more sense for him to do it this way. So I really enjoyed hearing about that. And then I asked him about, you know, downturns and how do you get through that? And his point was, you know, chaos and uncertainty, that's could be an opportunity, right? If you're careful and you're focused and you know what you want to go for, and you have the courage, right? Anytime there's a downturn and everyone's running for the hills and saying real estate's dead or you're going to lose your shirt on this, well, if everyone's against it, you know, that's when perhaps you need to look into it and carefully, you know, at least tiptoe for starters, and then jump all in once you understand what you're doing. But I agree, you know, when the chaos and uncertainty happens, you know, your current investments are the ones you're worried about, but then you got to look at your new investments because that's where the opportunity is. So have some capital that you can allocate during downturns. And that could be where we are. It's tough to say. I don't like to time the market, but I do want to, when things are rough, that's when I really want to try to make sure I have capital for opportunities that come up. And then it was interesting the way he talks about the three paydays. You know, it sounds like he's talking about appreciation, right? That's on the front end when you, or the back end when you sell. He's talking about cash flow. He's buying properties that are going to cash flow right out of the gates. And then principal pay down, right? That's something that people don't really think about. Like when you're paying your mortgage, that's a bill and you think, oh my gosh, that's a big chunk. But part of that is principal, and that goes right in your pocket when you sell. So the only thing I would add to the three paydays is the tax savings that real estate gives you, right? That's another payday, and it's one that's hidden, but we talk about this all the time. The biggest eroder of your wealth is taxes, and real estate is a great, great way to cut, reduce, and eliminate your taxes. And then, you know, he gave some advice for finding a coach or a mentor, and it's really interesting, right? He said, pick a niche. That makes sense. You got to first do your own like due diligence and dig in and find something that you're interested in, some asset class or some strategy, right? For me, it's passive investing in real estate syndications for the most part. Then he says, find someone, a community, a person that you can, you know, sound like know, like, and trust, which is, you know, kind of why we built Left Field Investors, which is kind of why maybe I like how his advice for finding a coach or a strategy. And then you got to put in the time. He said 3 to 7 years. I mean, yeah, you don't want to, I first balked when he said that because I'm like, I'm not going to commit 3 to 7 years not knowing if it's going to work. But if you picked a niche carefully, you found someone that you know, like, and trust, or a community, and you've done all your due diligence, and you know it's a proven strategy from the people you've talked to, from the partners you're making, from in the process of picking that niche, then yeah, you got to commit your time. It's not overnight. This is not a get rich quick scheme real estate. This is a build wealth slowly. And so committing the time makes perfect sense to me. 3 to 7 years, you will be off and running. I don't know how you can be in real estate that long and not have success and not make money. So it was really interesting talking to Chris. Again, not our typical, you know, real estate syndication type guest, but really interesting. I always like to have people and chat with people who do things differently, and maybe some, you know, you can always get something out of that. I know I sure did. So we'll keep up with Chris, and that's all we have for this time. We'll catch you next time in the left field.
Thanks for hanging out in the left field with us today. If you are interested in becoming a left fielder, you can find us on the World Wide Web at www.leftfieldinvestor.com and click the subscribe button to join our community. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the show on your podcast player so you don't miss an episode. If you really enjoyed the show, a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the podcast would be appreciated.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing said on the show should be considered financial advice. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by Passive Investing from Left Field and Left Field Investors. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.